WildTalkRadio.com. The following program is not intended for children. It contains mild language, violence, sexual innuendo, wink, wink, brief nudity, and deals with mature themes that some may find offensive. Parental discretion is advised.
The Wild Talk Radio Network now presents the evolution in online sports entertainment.
Hey, everybody, this is X-Flat with D-Generation X.
Hey, this is the Rated R Superstar, a.k.a. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge.
This is everyone's favorite wrestler and mine, Rob Van Dam. You're listening to me because you are listening to Wrestle Talk Radio.
Wrestle Talk Radio.
Who's ready for story time, baby?
Hosted by Tim Stein.
Best there is, the best there was, or the best there ever will be.
The intern, Kane Kittens.
I am the best in the world at everything I do.
Special guest host this week, local indie wrestler Keishi Matsunaga.
I'm better than you, and you know it.
And the producer, Sir Rockin'.
Acknowledge me.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
WTR Sunday night.
And remember, it's okay to play with yourself. As long as you have an action figure.
I'm a nice man. Yeah, I'm a nice man.
Sunday night, you know what I mean? It's time for another edition of WTR Sunday Night Wrestling Talk Radio, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, wildtalkradio.com, twitch.tv/WTRLive. Chat if you have Amazon Prime, link to your Twitch account, it's called Prime Gaming. Support the channel by clicking the purple rectangle at the bottom of the screen. You can use creator code ROCKSUCKER2499 shop. Some guy named John Cena is in the shop right now, so go buy him. If you ever heard of him, or if you can see him. Anyway, I'm the producer, Sir Rockin', joined as always by the intern, Kane Kittens.
Cool.
He's not talking. Off to a good start. Will Keishi Matsunaga talk?
Yeah.
Hey.
John Cena is also in the new Mortal Kombat game coming out.
There you go.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere, but not being seen by anywhere. We'll try intern again? Nope.
Maybe if he unmutes.
He did unmute.
He did unmute.
Oh.
Oh.
Hey.
Oh.
Okay. I don't know. I hit unmute on Discord and it didn't do a damn thing. I just had one question. In that theme song that we heard on the intro, did it say he likes to pick asses?
Did it?
It says, I like to kick them, I like to pick them.
Or is it stick 'em?
No, it was pick. There was a P sound.
Is it a stick or a pick, Tim Stein?
I have no comment at this time.
Yeah, that was your intro.
Oh, that was my intro. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of WTR Sunday Night right here. Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network. You can find us on twitch.tv/WTRLive. Live interactive chat room. Come on, say hey if you're listening anywhere else on the World Wide Web. So, Wrestle Talk Radio.
It's definitely pick 'em.
What would you like to talk about?
It's pick 'em. There's stick 'em. Shove
there's
em.
Love 'em, kick 'em, shove 'em, stick 'em, flaunt 'em, watch 'em, pick 'em, kick 'em.
There you go. It's all there. It's all there. So yeah, we have things to get into tonight. And we started off with Ass Man because apparently Daddy Ass left his boots in the ring and everyone's like, is he retiring? Brandon, is he retiring?
I don't know because of the way that that all unfolded. So it's right after they lost their trios title match, the second time they've lost their trios title match.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the match, you had Malakai Black. I have to use his AEW name. almost said Alistair. But he kind of leans over and he whispers something to Mr. Ass and like gets out of the ring. So in a sense, that could be storyline. You know, because he's all about getting in people's heads and make you question yourself, all that kind of fun stuff. The one thing that got me after that, though, was you had Buddy Murphy also go over and kind of whisper and talk to him. And it could have been just something like, you know, Malakai saying, thanks for this being the last match, because that's a big deal. So I don't really know in this situation what it is, because the camera really lingered for this whole time. And then on his way back, though, he's like shoving the Acclaimed out of the way. They have no clue, it looks like, what the hell's going on. So part of me wants to say it's storyline, but if it is the end of the journey, I mean, hell, he's been going for 30 damn years. I don't think anyone will have any qualms with him hanging it up.
Is this the end of the road, Cage?
I'm kind of in the same boat as Brent, because of all of those things. But on top of that, one of his, I can't remember which one of his kids tweeted about it. And it wasn't like, it didn't seem like it was super in character, because it was kind of like praised him. And even, but it also threw in like, even though we have our differences right now, blah, 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 thank you for everything. So it's interesting to see, because they're kind of skirting the line. So it'll be interesting to see how this pans out, if he, you know, just decided that maybe he wants to just only coach, or if it's storyline that, you know, he's holding back the Acclaimed. It's tough to say. They're doing a really good job making us all wonder.
They are making people wonder. From a booking perspective, is that the right move to tease retirement, Tim?
If it's a legit retirement, you know, that's a tradition. And there are some traditions you shouldn't gimmick up and bake out. We've seen phony retirement speeches and all of that stuff in the past. One of the most, one of the first ones to come to my mind is Mark Henry going into the ring and saying, yeah, I retire. Haven't seen him come out, and then having Henry sucker Cena so he could have a match against them. You put your boots in the middle of the ring and you walk out. That says you're done, son. And it should be kept that way.
Unless your name is The Undertaker or Cody Rhodes. Both of them left stuff in the middle of the ring, and that was not the end of the road for them. No pun intended.
You know, if it was an intended pun, you would say end of the roads.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, with Tigger, I think it was supposed to be the end, and then he got turned back into the
Yeah.
I understand that one, but I'm saying in AEW, we also had Cody Rhodes at one point take off his boots, and the announcers played up, oh my god, is he done? Is this it? And it just went into next week.
So, yeah, absolutely. With Undertaker, you put an asterisk there because it was supposed to be it, but he got talked into coming back.
So playing all that now, so now it's a booking trope for AEW if it's not an actual retirement.
I mean, it's not one of the band moves, so.
Yet.
But they probably had to clear it with one of the coaches before they did it.
Well, I mean, is one of the coaches.
Yeah, he's one of the coaches, so.
He approved himself.
Exactly.
I mean, he's what, 59 now?
Something like that.
Hang on.
I mean,
he's a couple years older than I am.
He don't look 59, that's for sure.
He is 59. He will turn 60 on November 1st.
Hot dog.
I mean, he looks, what, 45 at this stage of his career? I mean, Brent said he's been in, what, 30 years, you said?
Yeah, I saw something earlier today that basically said he has been wrestling for about 30 years now. And if that is the case, again, no qualms if he wants to hang them up. That is one hell of a career. If he wants to just focus on coaching, if he wants to just be a manager, if he wants to, you know, do commentary or sit backstage, go for it, Billy.
Now,
but
that said, what's your favorite version of Billy Gunn, Brent?
Smoking Guns.
Really?
The original. Yeah.
The long mullet and everything, that's your favorite?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Him and Bart coming out with the jeans and, like, playing up the whole cowboy shit. Yeah, that was... That was great because it was cheesy in that moment. I mean, it fit what was going on at the time in the WWE when they had all of the giant themed things. Don't get me wrong, badass Billy Gunn is iconic for, you know, DX, mm-hmm. and it kind of set him up for the rest of his career from there. Mr. Ass really didn't do anything.
No, Mr. Ass was King of the Ring.
Boy, howdy. And then there's another storyline that someone will probably bring up here in just a minute.
Okay. Case, what's your favorite version of Billy Gunn?
I'm going New Age Outlaws Billy Gunn. It was just the most entertaining. Like, New Age Outlaws DX with all of the shenanigans that they pulled.
Okay. And then, Tim?
Yeah, for me, it's New Age Outlaws.
I thought someone was going to drop the other storyline.
Which storyline, right?
The one?
That would be Chuck and Billy.
See, you're all missing the boat on that.
With the commitment ceremony.
No, you're missing the real best version of him.
No, not Daddy Ass.
Rockabilly.
Woo! Oh, ah.
I hate you, Rock. I hate you.
Yeah.
I was perfectly fine going through life forgetting that whole era.
But you can't, because Rockabilly walked so that New Age Outlaws Billy Gunn could run.
No, I think Rockabilly tripped so that Badass Billy Gunn could run away from it.
Like, tripped into a dumpster?
No, they threw Chainsaw Charlie into the dumpster.
Yeah, but I think they threw Rockabilly into the dumpster with them.
Oh, well, possibly.
I mean, he's had a great career. I mean, so if it is his time, then so be it. We'll see, I guess.
Hang on, I need to look something up.
As you look at it, I'll ask this other follow-up to it. So, I asked favorite version, but what is your favorite Billy Gunn memory, Tim?
Interviewing him.
Was it now?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I got set up by Jason Klebitt to do the Road Dogg intro, and he kept giving me the gears. With his mic muted, and this is what, like, when we were all doing it in one place, and he got me to screw it up big time, and Billy Gunn said, "Don't ever do that again."
And have you?
Not for him, no. I practiced all week and had it down perfect, and then Klevitz goes and screws me up.
All right, Case, your favorite Billy Gunn memory moment?
Man, that's hard. There are so many. Anytime DX dressed up as somebody else was fun. I liked all the Daddy Ass stuff, even though it was weird and strange. I still thought it was fun and hilarious.
Okay.
I enjoyed his program with The Rock, but I think that had more to do with The Rock than Billy Gunn and that promo. Favorite Billy Gunn moment.
I mean, those are pretty good ones right there.
Yeah. Like, I mean, when you look back at a guy who's been in the industry as long as he has, and knowing that he's done as much as he has, and you, like, it's hard for me to pick a moment, that's awesome. Because it just lets you know right there that he was a great wrestler.
I mean, we could talk about his run in TNA, right?
I was about to bring up the Voodoo Kin Mafia, goddammit!
Well, talk about it then.
That was one of those things where it's like, yeah, they left WWE, went to TNA, and wanted to stick it to Vince, so they created the Voodoo Kin Mafia. Or VKM. Wonder what that could be. And then they brought in, like, Roxy Laveau to be, like, a voodoo doctor with the... It was one of those things where you just looked at it and you were like, what the hell? But one of my favorite moments, honestly, was the... Hall of Fame, where you brought back all of DX, and you just had, you know, all the old folk there, John, Hunter, they're just ripping things left and right, and then there's Billy, who basically, I think he said, like, he can't fire me again, it's fine, I can do whatever I want, and then Hunter's like, no, he'll hire you just to fire your ass again.
And they're little digs at AEW, and yeah. He couldn't do anything, because the AEW just, I think, was announced and he was hired, but hasn't started at that point.
I think it was just going. It was just, they were doing like Fight for the Fallen and stuff like that, but it hadn't been like really ramped up the way that it was.
No, because it hadn't been March, April.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
May would be their debut pay-per-view. So yeah, there was that. So we'll see what the future holds for one badass Daddy Ass Billy Gunn. But we now need to switch gears and talk about one of the fastest rising stars in WWE currently, one L.A. Knight.
Yeah. Cage and I were just right on it.
And Tim was very loud.
Because that was really loud.
Yeah, that was loud. So, there's some talk on the internet that he's a rock ripoff. Is he, Tim?
Oh, you know, just about everybody who's made it big has been a quote-unquote ripoff of somebody else from the past. Is it a ripoff? Is it a tribute? Is it taking elements and incorporating them into your own thing? He's not ripping anybody off. He's doing his thing.
Okay.
You can draw comparisons to The Rock. You can draw comparisons to Triple H. You can draw comparisons to Stone Cold if you want, because there's a little bit of all of that in everything he's doing. You look at some of his mic work, and maybe your brain hears a bit of DX mic work. There's nothing wrong with standing on top of the shoulders of those who came before you. And that has been done basically since pro wrestling has been around. But saying he's ripping off The Rock is ridiculous.
What's your take, Cage?
I mean, if he was blatantly ripping someone off, it would be a lot more obvious than, oh, it sounds like this and he does this. A ripoff is like him coming out, saying all the things that The Rock would say, doing all the things that The Rock would do.
If you smell what L.A. Knight is cooking.
Yeah, like that. And like Tim said, there's nothing wrong with taking elements from other wrestlers who came before you to mix them into your own character to make it better. And like Tim said, it's been happening since wrestling began. Wrestlers do it based on characters based on movies, and it works, and vice versa. Or, you know, people do tributes from guys that came before them. Wrestlers will take moves from their trainers. Are they ripping off their trainers by using their moves? No. It's a tribute to the guys that you respect that came before you. Otherwise, no one would be able to do other people's moves that they came up with, and then all of a sudden, wrestling wouldn't look anywhere near what it is right now, because everybody does moves that everybody's done before. There are very, very few times that someone does something completely original that you can't say, oh, that doesn't remind me of anything I've ever seen ever before in my life. It's always, oh, I like that they took elements of this, and I like that they took elements of this, and they're making it their own.
You know, even Hulk Hogan admitted he modeled Hulk Hogan, the character, after, brain freeze, brain lock, help me out.
A guy from the 80s on massive amounts of
Jesse
cocaine?
Ventura.
Not Jesse Ventura, no. Shit.
As Tim thinks about it, because he's going to need a minute to think of who he's trying to think of, let me ask you this question, Brent.
I just had his name in my head, and it just like...
Billy Graham.
Thank you. Superstar Billy Graham. And Jesse Ventura has admitted the same damn thing. Superstar Billy Graham was the blueprint for both of those guys.
Example of Riddle.
But they got into trouble for a lot different things.
Example of Riddle using the RKO. I mean, that was because they were a team more than him trying to be like Randy Orton.
What about Kevin Owens using the Stone Cold Stunner?
That was handed down.
So, I was going to ask you this question, Brent. Who's doing more of a Rock ripoff? Is it LA Knight or Ricky Starks?
Oh, Ricky effing Starks. Without a doubt. The mannerisms, the look, everything that he does. I mean, he's even kind of got the loose-fitting shirt that Dwayne would wear early on. So, with that, that is more of a, like, taking at face value. With LA Knight, the thing I have a big issue with is that it's all of a sudden people are like, oh, he's ripping off Steve Austin and The Rock. This is the same thing he's been doing for over 10 years.
Longer than that.
Everybody's saying it now because Kevin Nash said it on his podcast.
And Kevin Nash didn't even know what he was talking about because he doesn't watch SmackDown.
Yeah, Nash had no clue. It was just, I don't know. He never watched NXT, it seems like, because if you remember, LA Knight was still the same douche on NXT doing the exact same thing. Yeah.
And I think we all need to remember, how did he get his foot in the door in professional wrestling and in entertainment? Oh, yeah. He was on a reality TV show called The Hero, hosted by...
Wade.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I wonder where he picked up some of the thought processes and mannerisms from.
What, you don't think that he didn't pick The Rock's brain behind the scenes?
Right. So, just throwing that out there. So, yeah, Kevin Nash just talked on his podcast. Hey, he's a ripoff. Oh, wait, I don't watch the product, so I don't know. But, hey, listen to the podcast.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels had a comment or three about Kevin Nash saying what he said about LA Knight on his podcast.
And, you know, when you get...
Basically called him full of shit without saying he was full of shit.
Because Big Kev doesn't watch. So here we are.
Unless he's paid to.
Unless he's paid to.
Hey, listen, if there's money involved, Big Kev will be there. Trust me, I know this.
So there you go. So that's the talk about LA Knight, and people are mad he's not in the U.S. title match at SummerSlam.
Yet.
Boo!
You mean, why...
Riot!
Why do you say yet, Keish?
I mean, things can happen. They always do.
You think he gets added in a triple threat?
I wouldn't be surprised if he got added as a triple threat. I mean, I'm not gonna go and say 100%, but it's WWE. They always do stuff like that. So, I mean, I don't know. I won't be surprised if he somehow gets in that match.
I was gonna say, with as over as he is, I doubt that they're going to. They're going to find a way to put him on the show in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Will it be, you know, a entertainment segment? Sure. Is it going to be a match? Who knows? But there's at least some way they're going to put him on the card, because you hear every week on SmackDown, or Raw or SmackDown when he walks out, that crowd pop is there. People want to see him. So... Hunter's not stupid. He will find a way to put him on there or set him up so that after SummerSlam, he's in a good program.
I mean, he hasn't won a thing in a while, so like he first needs to start winning things. Because what was the last big match he's won? Anyone know?
No.
Exactly.
Wait until after SummerSlam to focus on LA Knight and start building a weekly show around him immediately following SummerSlam.
I think that's a possibility where he's going to be a main focus going forward.
His last win was on SmackDown June 23rd against Rey Mysterio.
Okay. So it's been a minute.
So a month ago today.
It's been a minute. So there you go. So we mentioned SummerSlam, and I gave them homework to come up with a top five list of their favorite matches, moments, and memories of SummerSlam. So we're going to kick it off.
We had homework.
Yes, you had homework.
God damn.
That's why you always check Discord.
I do check Discord. That's why I have a Word doc in front of me.
Yeah, I knew that word. He was going. That one.
It's me, for God's sake.
He probably has 17 on his list.
One, two, three, four, seven. Seven in case people had chosen some of the ones I had.
Whoa, I didn't think of choosing extras.
There we go.
You're more than allowed to choose the same thing somebody else did, genius.
I understand, but for content, I wanted to be able to talk about other ones.
Okay, we're going to start with Keishi, and he's going to run off his top five and break them down.
Do I go 5-1, 1-5, any order? Yeah, does it matter?
It doesn't matter. It's not a ranking system, just five of them.
Davey versus Bret Hart is in there for sure. That was an amazing match. I'm sure it's on most people's lists. What else? I went the custody of Dominic Mysterio match.
Of course.
Don't get me wrong. Like, the end game of that was a little bit ridiculous, but the build up for it was like a really good story. So I gotta give it to that. Tables, ladders, and chairs.
There's one.
Yeah. I mean, how can you not? That, like, it set a precedent, and the lead up to that, you know, like, that was kind of like, for that era, it really, really, like, just shot the tag team division into another level.
Okay.
Which one do I want to do next?
Pick that one.
Bret and Owen SummerSlam. I mean, that's probably a little bit more of a Canadian/Calgary bias. But at the same time, anytime Bret and Owen were in a ring together, it was great. So,
okay.
Plus steel cage.
Big blue steel cage, yeah.
Yeah.
Big blue.
And my top one I chose, not so much for the match, but it was Undertaker versus Undertaker. And that is because that was a SummerSlam that was the very first live pay-per-view I ever watched.
Nice.
So I had, and like the build up to that, like, because before that, when I was a kid watching wrestling, you see all the build-ups on, I can't even remember if Monday Night Raw was a thing up here back
Superstars.
Then.
Superstars.
But yeah, Superstars on the weekend, whenever I managed to figure out wrestling was on, and I would watch it, and people would build things up, and then there'd be a pay-per-view, and I wouldn't know how to watch the pay-per-view, and then you see the fallout later, and it was like, oh, crap. And then this big Undertaker thing was happening, and my brother's friend was getting the pay-per-view, and we got to go watch it, and it was the coolest thing that I'd ever seen in my life wrestling-wise up to that point, because like I said, it was my first pay-per-view ever, and it was a big deal for me. So I have to give Undertaker versus Undertaker my top.
That was what, 94?
I'm going to have to look that up.
that was... Oh. It did not have a date on it. Hang on.
I think it was 94,
94. 94, right.
Because I think that was my also first pay-per-view, like, scene live. I think that was. Because
before it was all VHS tapes from the video store.
Blockbuster.
For anybody listening that remembers that and those that don't.
What's a VHS tape?
Exactly.
Exactly.
It's a slightly bigger Betamax.
I think SummerSlam 94 was the first one I saw live.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Because Brent's an overachiever, we're going to put him last. Tim, what's your top five?
God damn it! I have an entire corner where I'm supposed to do research. You knew this was
going
to happen.
I know, so you don't
want to... That's why you're going last.
Yeah.
We want to give you your time to shine.
Dude, think about it as your main eventing this segment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That yeah.
All right, Tim, what do you got?
Well, I'm not going to give them to you all in any particular order except for the last and the first. And the last, like, in fifth place, I've got a two-way tie. So, yeah, I take six.
Overachieving.
By one. I'm not interning.
How many are Bret Hart means. Matches?
Well, don't worry about it.
All right. We know the answer to that one. Let's go.
Anyway, the unsanctioned match, Shawn Michaels' return, taking on Triple H, and Undertaker versus Edge, Hell in the Cell, are tied for fifth. With me.
Okay.
And Shawn coming back after, what was it, a 4-year hiatus, and like 95% of the match, Triple H is trying to break Shawn's back, like he focused on his back, before Shawn winds up with a victory. And Undertaker versus Edge, that was like, what was that, 2000?
What one?
In 2000.
Which one?
Hell in a Cell. Undertaker versus Edge.
It's not 2000. 2000.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, 2008.
Yeah.
I'm sitting too far away from the computer.
I was like...
The 8 looked like a 0.
2000? No.
2008. Shut up. I said 2008.
Yeah.
No.
Nah.
All right. Those are your number fives.
What's those are my ties for five. Yep.
Okay.
Also on my list, best 2 out of 3 falls, Chris versus Chris.
Okay.
Jericho versus He Who Shall Not Be Named.
Yep.
And this was absolute Canadian strong style wrestling. These guys were beating the living hell out of each other the entire time they were out there.
Okay.
And Canadian strong style. Casey, you might be able to describe that better than me.
How do you describe Canadian strong style? It's like a combination of like learning to wrestle from Stu Hart and then also learning to wrestle from a Japanese wrestler.
It's stiff, it's fast, the holds are real.
So it's Japanese strong style but polite.
Japanese strong style but in like 30 below.
So according to ChatGPT, Canadian strong style is a term used to describe a particular style of professional wrestling that originated in Canada. It is heavily influenced by Japanese strong style and British technique wrestling, while incorporating its own unique elements. The style emphasizes a hard-hitting, physical, and technically proficient approach to wrestling. Key features include stiff strikes, technical wrestling, psychology and storytelling, high spots and high impact moves, resilience and endurance. Those are the five.
The five eyes of Japanese of Canadian strong style.
Yeah, notable Canadian strong style wrestlers include Chris Jericho, Tyson Kidd, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and many others.
You mean the five A's of Canadian strong style?
There you go.
Good job, Cash.
You're welcome.
That worked quite well. I'm impressed. But yeah, so that's actually a pretty damn good description of Canadian strong style. Most of the indies out west out here, of course, they get in Canadian strong style, and of course, Rick Titan almost broke my arm demonstrating it to me one night.
Okay, what's next?
Where'd my list go? Oh, there it is. Now, of course, Casey, you mentioned Brett versus Owen in the steel cage.
I did.
I got that on my list.
Naturally.
Well, it's Brett versus Owen. I mean,
yeah,
those guys. Arguably the best technical wrestler of his generation versus his older brother.
Yep.
And anybody who knows anything about the Hart family will tell you Owen was the better wrestler. He really was.
Up to and including Brett.
Yeah, especially Brett. Yeah, so that's on my list. And, of course, the number one on my list is Brett versus British Bulldog for the Intercontinental Championship in 1992.
Wembley.
Absolutely fantastic match. There's one more on there that I have that I haven't mentioned yet.
So seven.
And that would be Brett versus Mr. Perfect back in 1991.
Okay.
That match was an absolute clinic, and Perfect sold his ass off. He was having bigger back issues than Shawn Michaels had at the time.
So there's like your list. So Brent, is Brock Lesnar bloodying Randy Orton on yours?
No.
Okay.
No, Brock and Randy is not on my list.
What is on your list?
All right. I wanted to be deliberate with mine, so I went across a lot of different times for this. I didn't want to focus just on like current era. So I'm going to start with SummerSlam 2019, when we finally got the debut of someone. It had been teased for a while, but we finally got to see what the hell the Fiend was against Finn Balor. And holy shit, when he first walked out with the lantern head and the mask, I remember like even the announcers didn't know what to think of this entire thing. They had the melted, like, they had the mask from Tom Savini. They had the lantern that was Bray's head with the light coming out of his mouth. It was just one of those moments where you heard the music, the new music, you saw him walk out, and it was like Taker when he debuted at Survivor Series. You were just in awe. People didn't know what to think. And then he completely obliterated Finn Balor. So I think that's a pretty good SummerSlam moment.
Okay, that's one.
Number two was another shocking moment that happened 5 years earlier when we got the debut of Suplex City.
Okay.
When Brock Lesnar completely manhandled John Cena in the title match.
16 suplexes?
16 suplexes, and Brock was never in doubt in that match. Like, he just worked Cena over from pillar to post. And we find out later on that it was John who helped suggest that fact, because that was the year that, wasn't that the year that Brock beat Taker?
Mm-hmm.
And so John had gone to him and basically like, you just beat the streak. You should be an absolute monster. You should obliterate me. And Brock went, okay. And went out there and subsequently did it for about 15 minutes. And it was one of those moments where it was just uncomfortable to watch, because we've seen John get in matches like that before. We've seen him, you know, work a style and then, oh yeah, he's going to hit his five moves of doom and boom, it's over. Lol, Cena wins. No. Cena got thrown around like a rag doll. Brock hit the F5, 1, 2, 3, and everyone went, oh shit, that really happened.
Okay.
And of course, it didn't hurt John at all in the end.
No, he was fine.
So we had two kind of early ones. I'm going to go a little, we had two like mid-level ones with that. I'm going to go very early with the next one. This is one of those that I remember from my childhood, and, it's not the first pay-per-view I watched, but it's one of those that kind of sticks in my mind. SummerSlam 88, the Mega Powers versus the Mega Bucks.
Mm.
Hogan and Savage versus DiBiase and Andre.
Okay.
And you got to see two icons team up and try to take on, you know, those dastardly foes in DiBiase and Andre the Giant. And there's always stuff under the surface with Hogan and Savage. You know, Savage, of course, is always protective of Elizabeth, always thought people had their eye when they shouldn't. But it was still just the fact of, you know, you got to see Hogan and Savage in a tag team together, and that was a huge kind of thing. And then Elizabeth with the distraction. God, there's so many others on this list. One moment that it's a great SummerSlam moment, but for all the wrong reasons. Hey, Rock, we're going to stick with Hulk Hogan, and we're gonna add Shawn Michaels to the mix. And just the utter fuckery that was Shawn Michaels selling his ass off in the worst way possible.
No. Overselling his ass off.
In the worst way possible.
No, I would say the best way possible.
Oh, no, it was entertaining as hell. But the whole thing is...
Bob Hogan, about halfway through the match, he finally caught on.
Yeah, that was the thing, was like, he starts just overselling, and Hogan's kind of like, okay. And then he realizes that Shawn is doing this basically as a fuck you. And Hogan's like, all right, I've had enough of this shit. But it was so over the top. It was so crazy. And just the balls of Shawn Michaels to do that with Hulk Hogan.
Okay, what's next?
I have two more. First up, the Boiler Room Brawl, Taker Mankind.
I was waiting for someone to mention that.
It was on my list! And when we got that, the turn we never thought we'd see of Paul Bearer turning on on Undertaker with the urn shot heard around the world. I like going back, or I like when they did their rival series on A&E, and they were talking about the fact of, like, that was filmed in two parts. The first part of, like, yeah, they shot the Boiler Room the day before, and, you know, Mick and Taker were just, like, beating the hell out of each other in there. And Taker ended up getting, like, busted open on his elbow, but they couldn't treat it because, shit, we have to do the stuff out in the arena the next day, and it's going to look weird if he's, like, all bandaged up and everything. So they had to just be like, tough it out? Maybe use some, like, super glue to, like, close it for the moment? We'll see. But that was a good one. And then, just personally, this is not going to make anyone else's, you know, top list, but as a kid, it was entertaining as hell to watch it happen, and just some of the stuff that came out of the match was entertaining as hell, which is why it's on my list. The Big Boss Man versus the Mountie from 91.
Oh, God.
The Law and Order match. And, you know, because I'm half Canadian, I had to put the Mountie on the list.
Of course.
I mean, you guys already covered Brett and Owen. I knew you guys would do that, so that was taken care of. But I just love the fact, if you had the match, the Mountie loses, gets arrested, and then you have the vignettes of him getting booked through the New York City justice system, of him getting, like, fingerprinted and photographed, and it was just so entertaining because it was so fucking off the wall.
Did WWE lose out by not teaming up Boss Man and the Mountie as a tag team?
I don't know if they lost out.
They could have actually called themselves Law and Order.
Only if you had the dun-dun sound.
I think that would have been before the TV show.
I understand. I'm just saying.
Are you sure? Because it feels like it's been on forever.
Yeah. Fair point.
Ironically enough, Law and Order's on my TV right now.
In season 37?
God. Hey, they took a 10-year hiatus.
I don't know, I'm looking at it.
I still have two on the list that I did not cover, but...
So, it premiered in 1990.
Hey! It would have counted!
It would have worked. Yeah.
1 year!
Okay, so what are your honorable mentions?
Honorable mentions. The Universal title debut, when you had Seth and Finn, you know, won the title and then gave it up 22 hours later after he busted his shoulder open. Thanks, Seth.
Separated.
Oh, were they talking about that?
I don't know. I don't know if they really touched on that so far this year.
I'm not sure.
At all.
At all.
And then also, we talked about him beating up John Cena. Cowboy Brock and the Tractor.
Cowboy Brock.
If we're talking about moments. When he brought out that tractor and lifted the ring and Roman just rolled, just kept rolling right on out of it.
Huh. Surprised no one mentioned Undertaker being screwed by Shawn Michaels in 1997 when Shawn was a ref. He went for Brett and hit the Undertaker.
Oh, yeah, and he begrudgingly hit the 1-2-3 staring right at Bret Hart.
Yeah, which set up, you know, the first ever, the Shawn and Taker stuff, which then led to Bret and Shawn at Survivor Series. I don't know what happened at that Survivor Series, but it led to a match.
I think the match ended early. I don't know.
It may have. Traffic and everything. Montreal's crazy.
God, that's an understatement.
That same SummerSlam, Owen Hart, Steve Austin.
Oh, the neck.
That
was SummerSlam.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't call that a favorite moment, so.
But it's a moment.
But it was a big moment.
That's true.
It's a moment for some people. It led to things. There was the Nexus versus the WWE.
Team WWE. Where Cena buried the Nexus.
Saw the return of Daniel Bryan, and Bret Hart wrestled in that one.
Oh, yeah.
For whatever reason.
He got disqualified, didn't he?
Probably.
I think that was the way they got him out of the match, was he used a chair on someone and got disqualified.
Was that the year he also won the U.S. title?
Yeah, that was the year he won the title. I predicted that, and you all laughed at me, except for Spud the following week. He said Tim was right.
And it was the only time he was.
I don't think so. Fuck you.
It's an easy setup there, Tim.
Doesn't mean you have to take it.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't! Move on.
You kind of do. Just
you kind of don't. Move on.
There was, let's see, Shawn and Vader 96, which had a DQ ending, a countout ending, and then a real ending. Highway to Hell, SummerSlam. That was an interesting event in and of itself. So yeah, so SummerSlam has had some great moments over the years. And then not some great moments as well. But those are for you to watch on the network. What?
Also the Marriage Made in Heaven. Didn't Savage and Elizabeth get married at a SummerSlam?
92, yes. I believe. I think, as Brent looks it up.
Yep, I'm doing that right now.
91. Oh, because Wembley was 92, so yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it was the Marriage Made in Heaven, Marriage Made in Hell. Or Match Made in Hell. Because that was Hogan and Warrior teaming up against Slaughter and Sheiky.
Ooh.
There was
the Triangle of Terror. Oh, God.
There was when Shane fell off the scaffolding with Steve Blackman.
When Blackman hit him with the kendo stick, and Shane just let go and went, whee!
Yeah, the birth of the Shane meme.
The birth of the Shane meme, yeah. That was something. Oh, and we're not talking about Lex Luger and his big SummerSlam moment?
Oh, when he won the title. Oh, wait. When they celebrated like he won the title and he lost by or he had won by countout.
Oh.
With the loaded forearm.
We had the Randy Orton cash in at SummerSlam on Daniel Bryan.
Oh yeah, the screw job of Daniel Bryan.
And which people, you know, kind of forget about, but led to many things for him. So yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it kind of led to things for him. So yeah, I thought there was a lot covered over the years. I mean, there was the Alberto Del Rio cash-in as well on Punk when to end the summer of Punk.
Kevin Nash screwed CM Punk.
Kevin Nash screwed CM Punk. Some interesting times that were had along the way of SummerSlam. But SummerSlam is coming up in what?
2 weeks.
Not even...
Yeah, I'm sorry, 13 days.
13 days from now. 13 days away, which means next week on WTR Sunday, Russell Talk Radio. It's preview night.
Ooh.
And then 2 weeks, we'll do the post-show.
We'll do the review.
Post-show.
The review of SummerSlam.
It's the post-show.
Is it a post-show if it happens 24 hours later?
Is it after the show?
Oh, technically, yeah, it is.
Thank you!
But technically, no.
It's after the show. It's a review. A post-show.
It's a review. A post-show. Something happens a couple hours after.
Keishi?
I plead the fifth? Is that the one where you don't say anything?
By fear of incrimination, this is an incriminating thing.
Oh.
And you're Canadian, for God's sake. You don't have a Fifth Amendment.
No comment?
Yes, she can plead no comment.
But that'll do it for WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio. Live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, Tim. This is where you start doing things.
Yeah, you keep cutting out because you're playing that music in the background and it just shuts both you and the music off.
There we go. We're done.
I can't hear anything.
Wrap it up.
So we're done. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Don't forget, as was mentioned just moments ago, it's our preview and pick'em night next Sunday night. Join us 10 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Mountain. Tomorrow night, immediately following Raw, it's the Raw after show.
It's the Raw post show, Monday nights, 11 p.m. Eastern.
Thursday night, the multi-time, multi-award-winning The Rack Radio Show returns with the lovely Lindsay Ward hosting, and she'll drag Rack along and they'll talk stuff.
Well, this week's a special episode of The Rack. Brent, would you like to tell them, folks, why it's a special episode of The Rack?
It's Interns Day!
Is that really a thing down there?
Yes! Yes, it is!
Is it like your birthday?
No! There is something actually called Interns Day. July 27th, National Interns Day. It is always the last Thursday in July. So, Rock, this could become a thing.
It's nothing to do with us, Keish.
Yeah.
It's always Thursday, too. This could be awesome.
Which means Brent will be on the show this Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern.
We have a special segment.
And, of course, don't forget to check out Fortnite with Friends. You can use Rock and Sock and whatever.
Use credit code Rock and Sock at Fortnite Item Shop. Hashtag Epic Partner. Buy John Cena if you can see him in the Fortnite Item Shop right now. Anyway, Fortnite with Friends, Saturday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Followed by CBR Live at 11:30 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, and like I said, we're back next Sunday night. We're going to preview the Summer Slams. So, you know, show up and we'll talk about it. That being said, have yourselves a great week, everybody. Say goodnight, Casey.
Goodnight.
Nope, no other plugs. Cool. Don't follow
anyone. Oh, wait a minute. Hold it. Just a second. Back it up.
Back it up.
We got plugs to do.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, like any news information, whatever breaks or anything like that, check out WTR's social media all over the platforms.
It's at Wild Talk Radio on Twitter X.
No, on Facebook, on Instagram, on X.
Whatever it is, it's at Wild Talk Radio, Facebook.com. That's Wild Talk
Good
Radio.
Good job, network. Elon.
What?
Don't worry, you'll figure it out at some point. We're gonna be on X.
If you ever wonder,
they haven't changed the logo just yet, but it's coming.
It's coming. Is that WTR Sunday?
Yeah, bird is going away, Casey. It's going to be replaced with an X.
Just don't post any videos.
You don't want God.
Because it'll be X videos.
Get it.
Anyway, you can follow me on X. At Flame Scorums.
There's also WTR Sunday on Facebook and Twitter. Or X, whatever.
Facebook and Meta and Threads. And
oh, we're on Threads, too.
Gramophone and...
All right, Keish, go plug.
I'm on Instagram at Kyle Driver, and on the social media platform, possibly, maybe, formerly, currently known as Twitter, also at Kyle Driver? Question mark.
Soon to be formerly known as Twitter.
The Elon Musk owned social media machine. I'm on
there.
Yeah,
Lord.
At Kyle Driver, just like an Instagram, at Kyle Driver. It's like the word pile driver, but if you kick the P in the P and put a K there, that's what you get. I got an online store, and you can find the link to that in the description of both of those social media pages. Thumbs.
Brent?
You can find me on whatever website that is known as, at Kane Kittens. You can also find me on Threads, because that might be a little bit more, I don't know, stable and appropriate to say on air. You can find me on CB Radio Saturday nights doing the Intern's Corner and talking about summer drinks, apparently, because that's what we did last night.
We did. Now you can say goodnight, Tim.
Goodnight, Tim.